No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district.
Hi, BBS radio listeners. This is Maria Sanchez, and we're absent our host, Senator Michael D. Brown, who is the originator of this program called Shadow Politics. I'm proud to have been his co-host now for about a year and a half. Michael has other things going on with him and his family. His son graduated last weekend, plus it was Father's Day. And then this weekend, I believe they're en route to some exotic location, perhaps in the UK or so. But regardless, we still have a program today and an exciting one for us because we're going to go outside the realm and the purview of politics. And we're going to talk about something that's come up that's called Brave Combat Federation. And our guest is Carlos Kramer. He's going to share with us what it is and what it's about. One of the things about our guest, though, Carlos is a cage announcer for the Brave Combat Federation, but he does a lot of other things. And he's going to explain to us how this entity came about, as well as what the world of mixed martial arts is about, why it is that they were ignoring some very world-class athletes throughout the world, and how they're changing that. Carlos is flying all over the world, and I mean literally all over the world, even though he is a resident business owner, father in San Diego. So, Carlos Kramer, welcome to Shadow Politics, and thank you for taking the time out of your international schedule to be here with us today.
Maria, it is my pleasure and my honor to be on your show. Thank you very much for having me.
You're so welcome. So to let the, I kind of teased about what it is that you do now and what we need to know more about now, because it's just coming to fruition. I shouldn't say just, but a better part of this year, I would say, has been its critical growth spurt. But can you go back to the world of MMA and what it was, what it is, and what you're attempting to do with this new genre or iteration, if you will, about it now?
Yeah, you know, the world of mixed martial arts has just grown by leaps and bounds. First of all, it's the fastest growing sport in the world. So this has kept up its momentum and its pace since the beginning of time for the UFC in 1993, when Hoist Gracie, at 170 pounds, was our first champion. And it figured out who was the best style. Was it karate? Was it the boxer? Was it the wrestler? Or was it the jujitsu guy, which no one in America had really heard of jujitsu up until then. But jujitsu showed that you could be a small, weaker man and win your fight without any problem at all due to technique and leverage and all that. So that was the first UFC. And now you look, and this was banned in New York. It was banned in many locations. Senator Bob Dole, I believe, called it human cockfighting. And it was, you know, it's just evolved and evolved and evolved. And now the UFC has had pretty much a monopoly over the entire world, over who gets in, who gets, you know, a contract, who gets exposure, and who gets the MMA, you know, the money that they deserve. So what Brave Combat Federation is doing, and that is the most incredible organization I've ever worked for. It's the fastest growing promotion on the planet in mixed martial arts. It is run by, His Royal Highness Sheikh Khalid bin Hamad Al Khalifa, and he is the Prince of Bahrain, and the CEO's President Mohammed Shahid, and they have done, Maria, amazing things. Including working with George Chung, getting us in 500 million households this last Brave. The last Brave in India set worldwide records for the largest mixed martial arts event in Indian history. Now, with India with 1.3 billion people, this is a market that Brave is going to, that the UFC, Bellator, any other organization hasn't shown any love to.
So you're Brave. Telling me that mixed martial arts is the sports, UFC was the syndicator of it, if you will. And now what the Brave Combat Federation is doing is taking that product and bringing it to other parts of the world that were heretofore either banned or ignored?
Correct. Yeah, correct. Okay. We're going all over to places, you know, like Abu Dhabi. We did go to Brazil. We're going back to Brazil. Just announced that we're going to be in Brazil, I believe it's August 12th. That is the date. And in the 29th of July, we're going to be in Tijuana, Mexico. So they're excited about that because that's going to bring in, you know, all of our Mexican fans as well as the California fans as well to really, you know, take this over globally. We were in, like I said, 60 countries, our last promotion on televised. So it's just growing and growing. And what they do is it's country versus country for worldwide bragging rights as well. So there's a passion there. Each guy who's fighting is representing his country and literally is giving the best effort he'd ever, you know, given his life for this. It's a money, and in exchange, Brave promotes, highlights, exposes, pays, gives these fighters the treatment like they've never had and the treatment that they deserve, right? Because you know how, what sacrifices it is to be married to a fighter or, you know, date a fighter. It's just, it's, you have to be a very supportive and understanding family.
Well, so tell me this though, Carlos, why is it that the UFC has ignored such a huge portion of the planet?
They're, you know, the UFC, for how large they are, they're only one organization at the end of the day. They can't be everywhere. And there's so many deserving countries that, you know, have literally superstars and they're not being exposed at all. You know, that would be incredible fighters in any organization. So that's where we're rising to the top and we've got some amazing fighters, you know, like Mohammed Fakhreddin out of Lebanon and Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi out of Palestine, you know, and just different places like this, Elgar Eldarov from Dagestan. His dad, Elder Eldarov, is one of our top fighters, and in his corner is a legendary coach, and he had his son actually, is kind of crazy news, but he had his son, I think at age 8, start wrestling with a little bear, and that was his training, literally.
You're
working
kidding.
Out with bears. No, it's amazing. It's amazing what... You know, it really opens your eyes because I'm in mixed martial arts here and, you know, all over. But, you know, California is where I live. Southern California is where I reside here in San Diego. And you think you're training hard? Well, you've got guys out there that are wrestling with bears, you know?
So were they toiling?
I met one guy in South Africa. Yes?
Go ahead.
I was saying I met one guy from South Africa who wrestled cows. Who literally
cows.
Would, that's how he would work on his takedowns by, you know, and I'm not for or against, you know, of course I love animals, so please no calls or letters on that, but it's just what he did, you know, he'd practice his takedowns of, and his chokes on the cow.
So were these folks that you mentioned, especially the ones by name, toiling away in anonymity, or they were being king of the hill in, like, what do you say, the big fish in the small pond? Because, yes, the folks that lived with them were in their communities, in their countries, knew of their largesse or their prowess, but they weren't getting the notoriety that the UFC gives to their stars.
Very good point. Very good point. And, you know, let's make the point also that, you know, these fighters are not only in anonymity, but they're also crazily underpaid for what they're doing. You know, they're going into the cage and they're risking their life. They're risking their vision. They could get paralyzed. Any number of things could happen. And, you know, that's one thing that I'm kind of fighting for and have been my whole life is to get these fighters the pay that they deserve. That's one thing, like in Brave, we are so amazing with. We've had fighters flown all the way out to, say, Brazil, say, you know, India. They do the last medical check, and the doctor's like, you know, it's 50-50 on this fighter's eye, whether he can go on or not. And Brave's like, nope, he's not going to fight. We're paying him his full money. We're not charging him anything. It's been an honor to have him, and hopefully his eye gets better and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, like you know, Maria, there's so many organizations that don't pay, promise bonuses, you know, do all kinds of things to these fighters. And it's really disheartening because that's all a lot of these guys have. That's everything for them. So it's very intense. And with it, you know, comes a great model that Brave has set up. Muhammad Shahid is amazing, but he's from India, and he's a mixed martial artist, where he said when he left there a few years back, it was frowned upon. You know, he wasn't in the public eye. He had no support. People thought he was crazy. For him to then bring Brave back to India in the biggest event ever for India of mixed martial arts, and the biggest event in mixed martial arts in the Middle East history as well.
Get their telecasts? Is it also pay-per-view, or how do they get into the 500 million households?
They go into the huge countries that, again, like Russia, the Philippines, you know, China. They're all over the map on these countries other than the USA, because that hasn't been their focus. They wanted to give, again, love to other countries, but Brave is going to be coming to the U.S. sometime this year, and it's going to be a monster show. So we're real excited about that.
So the champions that are awarded with the Brave Combat Federation's matches, are they recognized internationally? Does the UFC honor them? Do you have the same rules, the same conditions, the same weight ranges, all of that that we
all
have here in the States?
Same. Yep, all of it's the same. And it's really, really amazing. So, you know, these guys, you know, if they have an opportunity, I'm always in the Brave family is always, you know, you're part of the family. If you ever have a greater opportunity that will help your career and your family, you know, we want you to go for that as well. You know, some things in life, you just want the best for that fighter. And we are giving these fighters the worldwide exposure and recognition that they deserve is the bottom line. So it's exciting, you know, Maria, it's really exciting to be a part of something that's doing good, you know, and the smile on these people's faces. And, you know, it's amazing. And they love me back in the Middle East, and I love them. You know, they're very supportive. They're screaming my name as I'm announcing the fighters, and it's crazy.
Well, I want to get into that because you can give our listeners some perspective about, because we're obviously most folks that listen to us, not obviously, but in general, are from the contiguous United States. And so we're familiar
right.
with UFC. We're not as familiar
right.
with the Brave Combat Federation, but you have history now with both. You've straddled both worlds. But Carlos Kramer is our guest. And as a side, he's a former captain in the United States Marine Corps. He received 2 Navy Achievement Medals for honor and valor. And then he's a business owner, and then he's a husband, and then he's a dad, and then he's this amazing machine on the side doing the cage announcing, and you've done it here in the States, and now you've done it all over the world. What's the difference? Is there any?
Yes. Oh, there's definite differences big time. But, you know, the same thing goes around the whole world is that everybody's the same as far as their love of MMA.
Mm-hmm.
But I love you know, doing it internationally and spreading. It's really educating, you know, people on mixed martial arts, because it may be the fastest growing sport in the world, Maria, but like you said, it's just now getting mainstream. You know, when we were growing up, no one knew what jiu-jitsu was. Everybody thought, oh, if you're a great boxer, you'll obviously win the fight. Oh, you do
right.
karate? Oh, man, you're really going to win the fight. But,
right.
you know, statistically, 85% or I think it's 88% of fights wind up on the ground. So that's where jiu-jitsu has proven to be the most effective martial art for fighting, which is interesting in itself.
Now, how were those other countries exposing their kids, though, to jiu-jitsu? Is it that we didn't know about it because it came from Brazil and the rest of the world did know about it? Or is it like us with soccer in the United States? We didn't know about it as much as the rest of the world knew about it. Are we the ones that are behind the times?
We definitely are behind the times in that area, but we are fast approaching. Brazil embraced it from Japan, and the Gracie family took jiu-jitsu to what it is today, and they, with Grandmaster Helio Gracie, you know, led the way for jiu-jitsu. The Gracie family, the Machado brothers, these are people that paved the way for jiu-jitsu and what it is today. It used to be, you know, there was, you know, in some states, there would be no black belts at all in jiu-jitsu. And now you're going to see black belts popping up in every state. You know, it's also a martial art that takes at least usually about 10 years minimum to get your black belt. So when you attain a rank of a black belt in jiu-jitsu, it shows that you not only had the dedication and put in extreme hard work, but that you're durable and super tough, that you haven't been injured and had your career stop short. So
now, how does the Brave Combat Federation choose the athletes for the different countries?
They have a matchmaker that works with them. Manolo Hernandez, the great Manolo Hernandez of Team Hurricane Awesome and 10th Planet San Diego, is right here in San Diego, and he would set up the matches. He'd also go, you know, to, you know, whatever country we're in. And we also have a man named Yusuf right now who is helping as well. And they go all around the world, Maria, and they find the best athletes and the best, the guys who also have a following too. You know, some of these guys may be, and it's a great thing. And that's another thing to talk about is, you know, these fighters, Conor McGregor has really shown that if you want to make the money, you have to be a brand. You have to be exciting, right? And these fighters forget that aspect. It's Conor, what he's done in business is just unbelievable. And he's paved the way for larger and larger payouts for other fighters by doing what he's doing.
So, Carlos, you live in Southern California. Give us an example of what it's like when you go to, say, Abu Dhabi, or when you went to India, or any one of your exotic ports of call. Literally, from the time you get on the airplane in San Diego, where do you go? Where do you fly to? What's your layover? How long? When you get there? Where you get to check in? Blah, 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 till you're at ringside.
Yeah, it's it's a wild one. It's really surreal. First of all, the flights are brutal, as you know. I don't care how you stack it or crack it. It is a nightmare for me because, you know, I'm like 240 pounds. I've had 17 surgeries, 11 on my knees. So 17 hours at one point in the air straight is ridiculous on my body. So I'm doing whatever I can to stretch out. You know, being able to get to sleep, drink a couple of those Binny wine bottles, then maybe a couple of more, you know, just between me and you, and took a sleeping pill, right? I have the neck brace, and I'm going, and all is well until the young Indian child keeps screaming for the entire half of the trip. Yeah, so yeah, I had to kind of correct him, but I did it tactfully, and the clap. The plane applauded for me.
Because
everyone was trying to sleep, The child was completely out of hand. But, it's amazing. It's amazing. And you get to, you know, to where you're flying to, say in Brazil, they have a driver pick you up. It's normally super late, you know, 3 a.m. or whatever. The driver we had was he was a bodyguard as well. He had an armored Porsche Cayenne that we were riding around in, you know, and it just was fantastic. They took me to like some heads of state in Brazil, their mansion, this gentleman's mansion, one night. And it just was unbelievable. The amount of, they had like the Brazilian barbecue chef there. He was just doing, they were just serving all the meat. Like you're in a Brazilian all you can eat, place. Yeah. And it just was amazing. So the people, you know, ecstatic. They love that you're giving their country love, you know, and that's what we're doing, giving it love, exposure, and saying, we want to support you. And, you know, and it's only fair. So Brave, you know, Brave is going to be big, huge, and they can be as big as they want to be because they have the Sheik supporting us. So, and he's a fighter himself, by the way. So he's not going to just go away. It's amazing. Sheikh Khaled is he's 2-0 in mixed martial arts as an amateur.
Oh, he's actually competing? I thought he was just doing it as a hobby.
No, he's actually competing.
Oh,
and,
boy.
KHK MMA does a training for him. Eldar Eldarov is his main training partner. And I tell you what, he is the most amazing gentleman in the world, right? You never have someone like that in that type of royalty that is actually training and competing, you know, in what literally one of the toughest sports in the world. So, we love
so you left us at being a guest at somebody's dinner party, but you still haven't gotten us to the ring, to the cage.
Oh, yeah.
To the fighters,
so the next
to the matches.
Yeah, the next few days are they'll have an open workout for the fighters, and they usually will do that. It's kind of fun. They'll do that in one of their biggest shopping malls. So they'll set up a whole Brave stage in the mall, and there'll be levels of people like looking down and through the glass and standing room only kind of thing. And we have a DJ there. We do the full open workouts. I've got the mic. You know, I'm making the crowd pumped up and laughing, and it's just a full show. Then the next day they have weigh-ins, and weigh-ins are, you know, very intense. The fighters have lost a lot of weight to be, you know, here, and they're literally by the ounce, you know, hanging on for that. And, you know, weigh-ins are very intense, and, you know, the next day is the fights, and that is bedlam. The people, again, the weigh-ins are at, you know, a mall as well again. And it just... you know, just the atmosphere is hard to describe. It's a bigger, better than any promotion I've ever seen. It's really an entertaining show that, you know, just is a real promotional entertainment, not only mixed martial arts, but, you know, just everything all included, and the fans and the love and the support just makes it all perfect for us.
So I know that India is the largest English-speaking country in the world, but what about the Brazil and Abu Dhabi and Dubai that you've mentioned? What do is there your counterpart speaking in their language, or are they translating it, or how does that work?
Well, we have definite ties in all of those countries. We just came from Kazakhstan, which... You know, I never knew about Kazakhstan. All I knew about was, you know, Borat, you know.
Exactly. Me too.
You know, in the movies. But they get it kind of insulted if you say that, because Kazakhstan turns out it's an incredibly beautiful country. Gorgeous. It's kind of, Maria, like Yosemite.
Oh, wow.
When I landed in there and, you know, got to there, it's just all green and mountains, and everybody is really, really friendly. But again, you know, places like that, and they have, you know, China and Russia right there, and they've got people that are training really, really hard. Like I said, you know, you've got kids starting training with bears. You know, what have you done today?
Yeah.
So these guys.
Now tell me about steroids or other sorts of enhancements. Is there regulations on that?
There are regulations, and... You know, unfortunately, it's so expensive to do the steroid tests on everyone. They'll only do it if they're, you know, either randomly, you know, if they need to, or just that it's set up. But as of right now, you know, the fighters, I believe, all over are not being tested, you know, for steroids.
Okay. So then you get to the match itself, and what's that like for you? Are you doing pre-interviews? I would imagine not, because that would be distracting. What is it like? And are you on camera, or are you for the audience? Your position.
So coming to the fight, like I'm, you know, I want everything perfect. So it has to be perfect. So I'm the cage announcer. I'm introducing the fighters. I'm introducing, you know, usually the committee or any heavy hitters that are in the audience as well. So we usually have about 10 fights. And when we have 10 fights, that means I have to make up the cards for the introductions of each fighter in each sequence. And then a lot of times they mix the sequence. They go, fight four is now fight two. Oh, fight nine is now canceled, but fight one, he's fighting him. So there's a lot of focus for me and a lot of information that I have to get, you know, as far as hometown, nickname, height, weight, record, you know, what the fans call them, things like that. So that's kind of my thing. And I'm pretty much solo. I like to be alone before it, you know, all goes off. And then I get to the arena usually about 3 hours prior.
Yikes.
I bring three different shirts because I sweat like a man possessed. I don't know.
Which you are.
Yes, but you know, Mer, I literally just will put the tie. All I have to do is like sink that tie in or the bow tie on, and I just will immediately start sweating. And
wow.
Once I start sweating, I'm done for the night. Like, I will continue sweating no matter what temperature it
is. Yeah. I hope you hydrate.
I do. I hydrate. Yeah. I have some snacks with me, the whole bit. And you know what? It's really, and these guys in the promotion, Mer, are really, really great. You know, I announced with Cyrus Fees as well as Frankie Edgar, who's a huge UFC fighter, former champion as a lightweight, is on our broadcast team when he's not fighting. Nate the Rock Corey is broadcast with us, and he's amazing. He's another ex-UFC fighter. Funny story. I was in that Porsche Cayenne that I was talking about in Brazil with that bodyguard, and we had myself and Frankie Edgar and Cyrus Fees in the car, and we were talking, you know, oh, when did you first start loving, you know, mixed martial arts, and what kind of show do you like? And they were going back and forth, like, you know, I like, you know, Mad Men or, you know, Breaking Bad. And I go, you know, I'm more of a Housewives guy myself. Like, what? What kind? I go, oh, it doesn't matter. Atlanta.
I'm
Beverly
sure they
Hills,
they
Orange
hoped
County.
That you were joking, right?
they're like, you're joking, right? I'm like, no, I'm actually really serious. I love watching Housewives. I do it with Tekka. We laugh together, and yeah, it's fun.
It takes your mind off of everything else that you've got going on.
Right.
So
right.
You are in.
I do have to give a shout out, Mer, to my beautiful girl Tekka.
Yes, Tekka.
And my incredible daughter Crimson.
And Crimson in London too. London.
Yeah.
So, Carlos, you get there, you get acclimated, you get the details, you get ringside, you announce the card, if you will, and then do you leave the very next day, or what? How does that work?
You know, I used to leave the next day until I realized that the next day flight was at 4 a.m. or 4:20 a.m. That I'd have, yeah, it was ridiculous on when I'd have to leave, maybe get up and get to the airport at that time. So I said I need a day. So I take it the next day to literally just rest and fly out the next morning. Yeah.
And then
we go fight to fight. So when we hit India, I didn't want to fly home and spend 25 hours, you know, traveling, you know, to get one day at home and have to fly back. So I stayed and then went to Kazakhstan. So I was gone 2 weeks at that time. But, you know, the second half of the year is going to be on fire for them. They're going to be doing probably two events per month, and it's going to be exciting and fun.
So tell me, how is the UFC reacting, or shall I say responding, to the Brave Combat Federation and the footprint that they're putting into the world of MMA?
You know, I don't think they really care too much right now. But I think, you know, I like that we're pretty low under the radar right now. If you're in the MMA world, you're going to be seeing a lot from Brave, because Brave does a fabulous marketing program for getting their name out there. I think that we're under the radar of the UFC right now, but I think they're going to be taking notice very soon.
So
and
tell me
really
this:
nothing,
does the UFC?
Know,
own their players, and thus the Brave Combat Federation own, and I don't mean that in a servitude way, but that there's a contract and we have agreed to do business exclusively with one another.
Yes. Like at Brave, we like to sign a fighter, if we can, you know, for a 3-fight contract, so that he would be solely for us for those 3 fights.
Okay.
The UFC does have their guys. You know, they've got fighters that are only supposed to fight for the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think if you saw some of the pay, Maria, after some of these major UFC fights,
mm-hmm.
you would be appalled at what you saw, like a big-name fighter who you think would draw much more on what they actually get paid.
So
it's
really?
Competition is good. You can't be the only one in town, because they were monopolizing and saying, you know, we're going to give you this amount, and there's really nothing really you can do about it.
Exactly.
You know, you get other players in the game, they're going to step up too now. So it's great. There, and again, there's plenty of room for everybody. This is, you know, this is our world.
Right.
And the world is of mixed martial arts. So it's not the world of UFC. It's the world of mixed martial arts, and we're happy and honored to be part of it.
Carlos, do you see any difference at all with these athletes? Are they similar regardless of where they are in the world and regardless if they're UFC or the Brave Combat Federation? Are they somewhat similar in age? Are they, obviously they're similar in gender, in basically, although we'll get to that a little bit later about the women. But in terms of weight and jiu-jitsu being the predominant factor and that sort of thing. So if you had your eyes closed and one of them talked about their life and their training, aside from grizzly bears or what have you, would you see a commonality amongst all of these warriors, if you will?
Yeah, and you know what? That's a great question, because you really can tell, you know, by country on some of these, with many of the fighters. You know, if someone, say, from the Philippines, they're going to have a great stand-up game and usually be, you know, very, very good kickboxer. Their ground game is still developing. If you have someone in Russia, they're going to be more hard, nosed grappler, someone who's been wrestling since the age of 5. So that would be their strong suit. So each country kind of has their own little flair of what they do. But, you know, at the end of the day, they have to be well-versed in everything. So these countries and these fighters are getting more and more even in their training all over, because in a fight, you have to be ready for wherever that fight goes, standing
mm-hmm.
on the ground. Well, you have to be able, you know, in the old days, and I mean like 1993 old days at the beginning, you could be, like Chris Gracie was a great jiu-jitsu guy, but he had no boxing. He had nothing else other than jiu-jitsu, and at that time, that took all. He was, you know, champion. So that just shows how far the sport's evolved, right? So
right.
A guy like that now, who just only knows jiu-jitsu, will get knocked out. So, you know, it's amazing how it's evolved. And it's, you know, there's a lot of talk of, oh, isn't it dangerous with the gloves and all that stuff? It's, you know, it's you once you're unable to defend yourself, you the bout is stopped immediately. So once you look up at the sky or your hands drop, or that's it. So the referee is supposed to and trained to step in and stop that fight. Where in boxing, they get hundreds and hundreds of punches landed on them over the course of a fight. So they have much more head trauma, head injuries, you know, even death, things of that nature.
So about the gender, have women been in the Brave Combat Federation as athletes?
We just had our first women's fight in Kazakhstan, and it was historical and groundbreaking, and it's the future, so I'm glad we did. You know, Dana White was quoted literally like, I think only about 6 years ago. He said, women will never fight in the UFC. And then, sure enough, literally, you know, a year later, Ronda Rousey came.
Right.
Turned that all around.
How was that received, though, with women? Because obviously their cultures are different than the West in general.
Mm-hmm.
Do they wear different garb, or is it similar to what we know of?
Yep, it's similar garb of what they'd wear, you know, in any fight, anywhere. And, You know, it was it's going to be tougher to make that, you know, the norm over there more.
I would think so.
Yeah, women have paved that road, you know, here, obviously. And those days were, you know, they had to go through it and still go through it, right? But back 5 years ago or so, you know, mm-hmm. being a woman in the gym, that's a tough, you're a hero, you know, as a woman
right.
going in there, subjecting yourself to these, to all the men and, you know, whatever comments they may say, because they'd never seen it before. So
you mentioned that the bouts are held like in their shopping malls or their,
no,
or at least the pre ones are.
Yeah, the open workout and the weigh-in.
But are the others, because we have them, at least the ones that I know of in the States, like in Las Vegas, they're in arenas and all. Do they not have that there in the other countries yet, that infrastructure?
We have like in Abu Dhabi, we did in their arena, we did the face-offs and the weigh-ins and the whole bit. So it just depends on, you know, if the stadium's nearby, what's convenient, what they've set it up for, you know, with the fans. So...
That's, and then in terms of attendance, is it men and women, and is it pricey, and are the tickets difficult to get a hold of? How does that work?
Yeah, no, you go to bravefights.com if anybody wants to follow Brave Fighting. It is amazing. We'll keep you updated. They give all the fights on YouTube. Tickets are easy to get, and as a matter of fact, anybody who would want a ticket anytime, let me know, because I want to share the experience with you know, that what we're doing with Brave. So, we want the fans happy and the stands packed. So they have promotions all the time to give away tickets. It's really, really amazing. In this growth period, we're not looking at the dollars. We're looking at the marketing and the people getting the Brave, the Brave vibe.
Okay. So it sounds like they're being very user-friendly in terms of the fans. And then it sounds like from what you said earlier in the broadcast that they're being compassionate and fair with the players.
Yes. Oh, man, the best organization I've seen ever as far as treating the fighters. Muhammad Shahid, our president, is a fighter as well. And he's been in the game fighting for a long, long time. He leads the crew of, second-in-command, Alex Soto. And he is out here in San Diego. He's a Bellator fighter who just retired.
Oh.
So this organization is run by fighters for fighters.
Wow.
And we know the sacrifice. We know the pain. We know what the wives have to, you know, put up with and the strict diets. And, you know, it's very, very demanding. So Brave is the best at honoring and exposing and marketing our fighters.
So we have just a few minutes left, and you had to mention the sacrifice on the side of the family, which is obviously because you being gone for 2 weeks and having a newborn and London, that's a sacrifice, right? But you
okay.
also just mentioned
huge.
Something else, the diet. Can you go into a little bit about the details of what that looks like for somebody who's trying to compete at a world-class level?
The diet is, you know, for me, even now, I eat every 2 to 3 hours. And thank the Lord for Tekka, or I would be on the Bobby Sands diet, fasting away to nothing. But the diets are very, very strict for these guys, especially the smaller guys, you know, the 145s, the 155 guys. They can't get too big. A heavyweight can gain more weight and lose it quickly. You know, I can gain 20 pounds and lose it fairly fast in a healthy way. But these guys, they have nutritionists, they're eating, you know, strict salad, chicken, you know, the basic vegetables, always hydrating. And then as the fight comes closer, they're shutting off everything, you know, literally dwindling down to nothing. And some of them, and that's a good point that you brought up, because it's quite dangerous on what you're doing, because you're kind of playing roulette a little bit with your body. And
mm-hmm.
going up and down that severely. So that's another topic that has been mentioned, that it is dangerous for the fighters, and we need to watch that a little closer.
Good.
Some lose 40, 50 pounds to
that's
make weight.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So tell us this, Carlos Kramer, Carlos Delos Kramer, what's the best social media contact information you want to share with our listeners?
I think my Instagram account would be great, Carlos V. Los Kramer, K-R-E-M-E-R. I would love, you know, it's an honor to be on your show, and all of your fans, hello from me. You've got a loyal fan and an avid listener of yours, Maria, forever, and I really appreciate your work and what you've done.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But I love the fact that you were available to pull the curtain aside and let us kind of look into the world of this amazing phenomena that you're at the forefront with. And I'm really happy that it seems to be working out on so many levels. And all of these multiple roles that people are playing, too, is really very interesting with the Brave Combat Federation. So good for them for finding you. Good for you for finding them, which, in another word, is a win-win-win.
Completely. Completely. Yeah. I pinch myself, you know, every day. And, you know, being the voice of Brave is a huge honor for me. And I don't take it lightly. And I'm extremely ecstatic about the future. I've been in the game a long time, but it's coming to fruition now. And that's what it's all about. I do it for the passion, not anything else. I truly love this sport.
Why don't we share that you also are jiu-jitsu master, too, in terms of, I don't know if I use the right verbiage, but you practice what you preach.
Right. Yeah, I'm a jiu-jitsu purple belt. I've been training under Dean Lister, the boogeyman, who is one of the top grapplers in the world, period. The greatest American grappler in jiu-jitsu, period, is Dean Lister, the boogeyman. I train under him and the pipe layer, Jeff Glover, who is, again, one of the most famous jiu-jitsu guys in the world, American as well, and just a phenom. So I'm truly blessed to have those guys and the Victory team around me. So
perfect.
It's been
perfect.
It's been a great run.
Well, we look to follow you and the entities that you so care about, especially with the Brave Combat Federation. Carlos Kramer, thank you so much for taking the time to be with our program. We post the broadcast. You're free to share it with whomever. And then we're going to say goodbye. And BBS listeners, we love you being with us. And, of course, you can always play this on demand. But we're going to say goodbye. This is Maria Sanchez. Goodbye.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.